This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Rock music today is hardly synonymous with rebellion. It's the music of high fashion haircuts and big money contracts. But there are bands that resist the packaging and even the money. One of those bands is Fugazi, a post-punk band from Washington, D.C. They've made anti-commercialism into an ethic. They won't charge more than $5 for concerts. They often play benefits for political causes. They sell their records at discounted prices, and they've turned down several offers from major record companies. They record on their own label, Discord. But when they're called a great band, as they often are, it's not just because they're idealistic. It's because they play impassioned music. Their concerts are often sold out long in advance, and they've sold 500,000 records since 1988. See what you think. This is from their latest album, Steady Diet of Nothing. Two of the members of Fugazi are my guests, Ian MacKay and Guy Picciotto. Both sing and play guitar, and both say their lives were changed by a punk concert they went to in the late 70s.
Guy and I, we both went to our first punk show in 1979. We didn't even know each other, but that show had a really powerful effect on both of us, and it took us into a whole like underground community that has really totally changed my life, so...
You were at the same concert?
Yeah, I was. There was a radio station in Washington called WGTB, which was a independent college station, but it was in a Jesuit university, and they ran an ad for an abortion clinic, and the priest sold all their equipment for a dollar to another university, literally a dollar. And it was the only station that played anything mildly alternative, is where I first heard groups like the Adverts and stuff like that. And there's a benefit concert to try to save the station, and bands like the Cramps and a bunch of local bands played. And that was the first concert I went to. I was, I guess, 13 or something. And Ian and a lot of the kids from across town were there. And a lot of people who ended up being in bands in Washington were at that show. It was just it was so frightening a night that a lot of the time I couldn't even look at the stage because the band was so intense and like people were breaking windows and throwing chairs around. And I was just like, this has got to be the greatest thing I've ever seen. So.
What was so great about breaking windows and throwing chairs and stuff?
Well, just like being 13 and like never having any experience of music outside of giant arenas and rock bands like Aerosmith and Kiss, and suddenly seeing bands like, you know, 5 feet away from you playing incredibly intensely, obviously for no money, and like people just reacting in such a visceral way, and there was such energy in the room. And, you know, a lot of it was negative, a lot of it was positive, a lot of it was just all kinds of stuff was going on. And just to be exposed to that kind of level of interaction was just, it just kind of blew my mind wide open. And there were so many young people there and just thinking like, you know, God, these people are in bands and stuff. I can't believe this is going on.
Listening to you talking about music, a lot of our listeners may think, well, these guys are just kind of pro-anarchy, pro-chaos, you know. But in fact, you're from a more political strain of punk music. You spend a lot of time playing benefits, and I think in Washington you haven't played a paying gig in around 2 years because just about everything you do there is benefits. Last weekend you were at the big pro-choice rally in Washington D.C. Now, how did you fit into that? Where did you play? Where within the rally?
Oh, well, actually, we set up the shows on the same weekend as the rally,
but for a group called Rock for Choice. Which is the feminist fund, the fund for the feminist majority has this wing thing called Rock for Choice where they're doing benefit concerts to help pro-choice issues or whatever. So we did two concerts in support of that fund.
Is one of the songs that you played at that benefit reclamation?
It is.
Why don't we hear that?
Okay, sure.
Do you want to say anything about writing it?
Yeah, Reclamation is a song that we first did a benefit in Ann Arbor for... an abortion clinic there, and it's a song about reclaiming bodies and taking them back from people who have mistakenly thought that they were their, your bodies were theirs.
If you're just joining us, my guests are two of the members of the band Fugazi, Ian Mackay and Guy Picciotto. The band's politics not only apply to the kinds of benefits that you play and the kinds of concerts that you play, but you also have your own set of rules of how much you'll charge for a concert to try to make things, I guess, more accessible to your listeners?
Things like that. Rules might be a little heavy-handed. I'd say that it's more something along the lines of what we as people and as a band feel comfortable doing. We go see a lot of shows, and obviously we'd rather pay $5 than $8 or $10 or $15 or $20 to see a band.
Do the clubs let you decide what you're going to charge for admission?
Well, that's an interesting point, because a lot of people feel like that that we demand this, but what they don't realize is that a lot of times we've had to say no so much. The clubs don't really have a say, because if the club says, well, we're not going to charge $5, and we'll say, well, we're not going to play. And we've turned down so many shows, it is unbelievable, because we're not going to be compromised in what we want to do. And if the situation is that the club can't reach it, then I'll discuss it. We're flexible, and we don't work on guarantees. We're not asking for anything unreasonable. What we're asking for is... we're going to come down, like, on our business end. We would expect the club to come down as well, because we're trying to, like, create an evening that's much more comfortable. When people pay $10 or $15 or $20 to see a concert, you better be good. You better be downright entertaining. We're not comfortable feeling we have to churn out entertainment every night. We want to be able to suck, and we want to make people feel like that, well, okay, they stunk, but it was cheaper in a movie, you know? And it's been really pleasurable to continue, like, trying to work this low door pricing in these bigger venues, because you have to get much more creative, and it's a lot more fun to give them a hard time, because people want you to play.
So what are some of the other principles that the band operates by that you have to, concern either pricing or admissions policies at concerts or things like that?
Well, generally speaking, we've always had... the low door price, and of course always all ages shows, they have to be open to all people.
So usually it has to be drinking age only, right?
It depends on the city, but it tends to be 21 and up, 18 and up, somewhere around there. But everyone has to be able to come in. We don't play shows that discriminate against people.
This is because you started going to concerts when you were young, and you want young people to be able to get into yours?
Yeah, we'd sit outside clubs cursing, bands from England that came over and played clubs that you couldn't get into, and wondering why if you were 14, somehow your musical taste was somehow considered, like, rotten, and you weren't allowed into a place to enjoy a band. So we just said, we vowed in blood that we would never do the same thing to other kids.
Are clubs legally allowed, if they serve alcohol, to let in people who are
some
underage?
Aren't, and those are the ones that we don't play.
So you don't play those?
I mean, it's fine, I mean, it's not a problem. They're certainly welcome to continue. It's not like we're trying to shut it down. We just have to be creative in finding other venues that we can work with. I think there are a lot of clubs that could if they wanted to, but it does not behoove their business to have people who don't who are not old enough to buy alcohol in there. So if they're gonna, you know, that's like, that's just the fact of the business. But, you know, quite honestly, rock and roll has an insidious link to alcohol, the alcohol industry anyway. And we're not, I just don't care about the alcohol industry. I think it stinks. So
let me ask you, I want to get back to that concert that you described when you were 13, this like really great pivotal concert.
Yeah.
And,
well, everybody was,
and you know, and the windows
covered
were
with afterbirth afterwards.
Yeah, windows were being broken and chairs thrown and there were tables collapsing under the weight of people. If that happened now at a concert that you were doing, would that be like terrific energy or would that be a problem?
No, that would be a problem. I mean,
yeah. Well, how come it's a problem now where it was terrific energy then?
I think it's contextual. You have to put it into a sort of a point in time. And the late 70s was a very, at that point, obviously, you know, disco music was like, had been sort of the top 40. The top 40 thing had become very removed from any kind of interaction with people. And I think music was made to be heard and not to be, there was no kind of, there's nothing going on. And the mood in the country was totally different then. You know, and I think that it has a point. You have to put it into a context somehow, and I can't explain it other than that.
Well, there was a real sense of with that show. It was the concert was taking place within the grounds of the university, and there was an incredible sense of anger against this Georgetown University for what they had done to the station, what they were doing in terms of the right to have information about abortions and stuff like that. So there was a total sense of desperation that people were losing their only cultural outlet, and so there was. Though people were, you know, totally messing around, there was also a sense of protest about it. Where now I think a lot of the violence at shows has become really ritualized in the sense that people figure, you know, at a punk rock show they have to, like, push each other around. And there's a real sense of kind of, like, going through the motions. And there's no sense of, like, what's really unfortunate is I don't feel there's a lot of, like, really focused or directed anger right now. Like, people I think are kind of, like, bored and they'll react against the environment. But I don't think that there's a sense of, like, to where it's going or to what end. And a lot of times I feel like it's been kind of ritualized. And that's what I think we react against is the ritual. I have nothing against the energy or that sense of aggression or anger, which I think, you know, young people are more than entitled to feel. But when I see it kind of getting processed in this kind of weird way by things like MTV and stuff, which represents like certain kinds of behavior at a show in a certain light and kids just kind of go through that, then that's what I think we react against. But to me, that night, there was just a sense of possibility in the air, and there was a lot of irresponsibility, which when you get to be 26 or whatever, you can understand a little bit better, and maybe we can bring that to the show.
I was reading a review of one of your concerts in the Chicago Tribune. This is at the Vic Theater in August of 91, and the review said that you had to stop playing several times to cool off confrontations between zealous stage divers and security guards. Do you remember what happened that night?
Well, I mean, it happens all the time, that
kind
of stuff.
Yeah, so what's that kind of situation?
Generally speaking, what they're probably referring to is that we don't play music when people are fighting. We're not interested in soundtracking, that kind of stuff. And so we probably stop to sort of defuse something that's in the crowd. We played like, 400 or 500 shows now. And I think in our like existence, I mean, of all these shows, we've probably had maybe a dozen, maybe two dozen like kind of altercations where they actually got into fighting, because we've always been really try to pay a lot of attention to the crowds that we're playing to and be aware of the fact that, you know, when you have a lot of people in a room, sometimes things get a little screwy. Sometimes the bouncers are the ones, you know, the security people are the ones who are a little out of line, and they have to be talked to too. I think the point of that really, and the point of like, that happens, like I said, almost every show, is only that we are part of the show and we are sharing the room with everybody else. And we feel a responsibility to speak out if something needs to be spoken out about. That's all.
Two of the members of Fugazi are my guests, Ian MacKay and Guy Picciotto. Both sing and play guitar. Fugazi's latest album is called Steady Diet of Nothing. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are two members of the band Fugazi, Ian MacKay and Guy Picciotto, both guitarists and singers. Your singing is very high energy. It's very loud. It's almost like a shout sometimes. And yeah. I'm wondering what kind of, especially in concert, probably. I'm wondering what kind of stress that puts on your voices, and what you have to do to recover after a concert.
Well, we both get hoarse voices. I tend to blow my voice out early, and then I remember my body adjusts itself to singing. This is on a tour context.
Yeah. And you're on a tour now.
Yeah.
So.
We generally, when we tour, we play usually six nights a week. So, yeah, I usually will sort of blow my voice out to begin with, and then my body will adjust, and I'll be all right for the rest of the tour usually. Although there's like, we both will suffer together, like blowing our voices out.
It's definitely, yeah. It's the agony of the flesh. I'll tell you, like, every night you go home and you just feel like, why do I have a body? This is a big nightmare.
Yeah, it's a real
honestly,
problem.
It's like, beyond the voice, it's like your knees hurt, your back hurts.
Well, you dance around a lot on stage.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like, even when you haven't played for a while, it's like you get calluses from playing that it takes a while for them to come back, and you just...
You're both holding up your fingers.
Well, I'll just show you. These are the guitar marks.
Oh, you're skinned on your finger, actually.
The strings are made of steel, and the whole thing is incredibly foolish, but...
The thing is, it's like a moment. It's like a full release. And, For me, performing or playing is as close to being free as I've ever felt in my life. It is by far the most extreme, like, kind of feeling I've ever had, and incredibly satisfying and addictive, and you can't stop doing it. I mean, I'm 30 now, so it's like I've been playing for 12 years.
You know what I find interesting? You know, a lot of people think of punk as kind of having ended quite a few years ago, and you're still playing music that comes
we're
out
like
of
shakers.
That.
We're like shakers. I mean, that's what we're like. it's kind of like just doing the forgotten dance.
Is that how you feel about it?
Well, you see, the thing is,
I'll tell you, I do. So no, the musical environment that I think we're in the 90s, I do kind of feel like a shaker because, like, things have changed a lot. I mean, money has come around. Major labels have come around. A lot of the independent networks have been broken up. It's kind of hard. I mean, that kind of very false expansion of, like, in terms of, like, you know, you have to have really huge broad appeal, and this has to, like, you know, that kind of mass perspective, I think, is really false. And I think it kind of messes up a lot of what goes on, because what we've done has always been very contextual in terms of, like, relating to a community or relating to something small. We've never felt like that we have to be massively distributed or massively accepted to be, like, important or have something to say. And I think that, so I think in that way, I kind of sometimes feel like we're kind of the last dinosaurs or something like that.
Have you turned down offers from labels, from large labels?
Many.
Why turn it down?
But we have our own label.
Discord.
And, yeah.
They have nothing to offer us at all, because basically what their motivations are is money and marketing, and our motivations are control. You know, we have to have control, and that's why we book ourselves. That's why we have our own label, and it functions pretty well.
I guess a problem of doing it that way, or what would be a problem for some people, is that you have to take on all this responsibility beyond the music. You know, you have to take on all the business responsibilities distribution of the CD and booking yourself into gigs. And I mean, that's
it's not for everybody.
Well, it's a lot of work,
and it's
work a lot of people would gladly not have to do, so that they could focus more of their time on the music and not on.
Well, that's
the business
why I think that's why
it.
I actually, so that it doesn't come off like we're being judgmental. I have no problem with other bands signing and doing and what they need to do to get their music out, because I think we're in a privileged position where we've got a label that has achieved, like, some notoriety or whatever, and we've worked hard to set up kind of, like, be outside of ourselves a network which we can work through. I don't think a lot of bands have that. I think a lot of bands need, like, someone to help them, you know, get their thing out or do what they want to do. And I think, you know, a lot of bands are doing great, great things, really making powerful music on major labels. I'm just saying that for us as a band, like, what's really most important to us is that what we do is, like, within our own sphere or whatever. And I think we do suffer for it. I mean, I think since we do have to book ourselves and we do have to do all this kind of extraneous stuff, sometimes it gets in the way of our being able to be, like, fully creative or our being able to spend a whole lot of time doing certain things. But it's a trade-off that ultimately I think is worth it, because, like, at no point in the game have I ever felt like I have to point the finger at someone else. I mean, if there's blame to go around, we'll take the blame. And if there's praise to go around, we'll take the praise. But at the end of the day, it's ours, you know.
Well, Ian, you handle a lot of the business end, right?
True.
Yeah. So how do you feel about spending your time on the business end of the music?
Well, for me, it's the only problem I have is the time conflict.
That's a big problem.
It is a problem. Yeah. But it's you know, you pay now or pay later. You know, if you don't do the work now, it's going to sneak up on you, because then you become one day, if you're like, I feel like if I was in a band that just said, well, somebody do all my business for me, then somebody's going to go out there and make a lot of mistakes. And one day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to be a fake, hollow band that means nothing to anybody and not even to myself. And that's a much greater payment, like, to me, than to do the work now.
I have one question that I'm sure you'll think is ridiculous, but one of the reasons why I don't get to rock clubs very much is that, especially on weekday nights, the concerts are so late usually.
Yeah.
I mean, in New York, for instance, some of the concerts started around 11 or midnight.
Well, when we were young, shows in New York, the bands would go on like 5:30 a.m. Like, we would leave around 8 in the morning. I mean, those shows were seriously late-time shows.
Yeah.
Well, I have never, I mean, who can stay up that late? But, I mean, obviously, you can't be a working person.
Or you have to go to work.
You have to
exhausted.
Drink a lot of coffee. Yeah, right. You have to be willing to really write off the next day.
I think it's sort of part of the straight, like the whole like straight time versus like time. Whatever,
right.
You know?
I've been on straight time for a long time.
Which is, me too. Yeah. I don't know what time you get.
A lot for cool time. Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, like, here, this is like the great, like, I get up usually around 8.
I get up around 1.
Yeah. So like but I mean, generally speaking, I like playing earlier shows personally. I mean, but it doesn't make any difference to me, you know, because when you're on tour, like basically when I'm on tour, I can sleep as late as I want. But when I'm home, this is a good example of where the business and the band side does come into conflict. Like, you know, it's a good point, because I do, like, if I was playing and also working, I would get up early and work. I'm schizophrenic, I guess. I'm a mess. What can I do?
Well, I want to thank you both a lot for talking with us. Good luck on the tour.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Ian MacKay and Guy Picciotto are members of the band Fugazi. They're playing tonight in New Haven, Connecticut, and tomorrow in Trenton, New Jersey. Fugazi's latest album is called Steady Diet of Nothing. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.